The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Zot HaBracha, we will not finish it today. Rather, we will finish it on Motzi Shabbat. That's what happens at graduation parties. Okay, so V'zot HaBracha, and this is the bracha asher berech Moshe, that Moses, Isha Elohim, the man of God, blessed et b'nei Israel lifnei muto, that Moses blessed the children of Israel before his passing. Now, we have here a number of really serious concepts that we would, of course, expect in the last parsha of the entire Chumash after this whole process of Tikkun. Number one, we see here that a human being's bracha is becoming divinely significant, so much so that it is the part of the Torah. Right? It's part of the Torah. And whereas we really saw the beginning of the Torah starts off with God blessing man, right? Now we have man blessing man. Okay? And who is this man who is doing the bracha? His name is Moshe, and he is an Ish HaElohim. Now, Ish HaElohim could be understood as a man of God, and Moses, out of incredible devotion, is called a man of God. But this is a unique word, terminology, which you don't find anywhere, right, in the entire Chumash. And it's introduced precisely at the end, because the Midrash Socher Tov says that Ish HaElohim means that Moshe was half man, half God. Okay? Difficult concept. His half, his upper half is God, and his lower half is man. And of course, it's a very strange thing. I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, it doesn't sound Jewish. But it's very, very Jewish. It reminds us of how the Chumash really starts off with a snake saying to a man, Vayitim ke Elohim, and you shall be as God. And the truth is that the entire theme of the Torah, it's man as he evolves towards a level of godliness. However, the snake introduces the whole process of history as a conflict. God doesn't want you to become like God. God doesn't want mankind to taste the meaning of eternity. God doesn't really want that. God doesn't want man to taste the meaning of supremacy. Right? And man had to deal with that dilemma. Is that true? Right? Because the deepest drive of the human being is to fulfill the way they were created. And the way a human being was created is as an image of God. Tzelem Elohim. We are all created in the image of God, and therefore the fundamental drive of a human being is to be godlike. And now the snake has offered a dilemma to man's natural intuition and motives, which is that I want to be godlike. So the snake is saying, yeah, but you won't be godlike because God doesn't want you to be too godlike, and therefore don't eat of the tree. This has been the dilemma. How does one reach a state of godliness? And the answer to the Torah is through the Torah, through the mitzvahs, through creating a relationship of unity with God, one thereby takes on a quality of godliness through becoming associated and related to the divine in their everyday behavior. So now this is a great step forward, that a man is called Ish Elohim, and the Midrash is saying Ish Elohim means part God, part man. Now that is the goal of Judaism. The goal of Judaism is that not that man becomes a god. The goal of Judaism is that a man becomes humanly divine, and yet human nonetheless. The whole purpose of creation is the revelation of God's oneness, which is revealed through creating a being that is other than himself, and giving of himself completely to that being, offering that being the taste of godliness, yet without in any way sacrificing their sense of otherness, their humanness, okay, the distinction. And therefore, at this point, Moshe is called Ish Elohim. This is an amazing step forward. This is a step in the fulfillment of Vayitim Ke'Elohim, the purpose of man being created in the image of God. And one of the shots of when God said about man, let us create man in his image, who is God referring to in the let us? And one of the shots is God was saying to man, you and I, mankind, let us make mankind in our image. And that is really the fundamental purpose of Judaism. To be a partner in the creation of man, a creation of man who will ultimately be a reflection of divinity. And this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe has reached this level where he can be called an Ish HaElohim. He has reached the level of godliness, but not in a manner that has caused him to sacrifice or forfeit his humanness. Right? Humanly divine. Okay? Or divinely human. And that is what Moshe Rabbeinu has reached. Now that's very nice. I feel really good. Moshe Rabbeinu reached it. What about us? Right? Well, we have to appreciate, as we mentioned before, Moshe Rabbeinu is more than some individual. Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu is our representative. And when you really think of the word representative, that means that that individual represents you. Right? Meaning that they are a particular manifestation of the whole. The leader isn't just another person. The leader, so to speak, is the concentrate, is what we call in Hebrew the tamtzit. A microcosm, a particular manifestation of the whole, and therefore is a microcosm of the whole, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu is referred to as his soul encompassed and include the souls of all Jewish people, right? Including ourselves. There's an aspect of our souls in Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was the flowering of Am Yisrael. And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu is called an Ish Elohim, that means that Am Yisrael has moved in that step forward towards the fulfillment of being created in the God, in the image of God. But that's very nice for Am Yisrael. But what does that mean for all of mankind? Well, just as Moses is to Israel, Israel is to mankind. Israel is a particular manifestation of universal man. Israel is referred to as the Tamtzit. Israel is a microcosm, once again, of the entirety of mankind. And therefore, we have to realize and appreciate that when it says over here, Moshe, Isha, Elohim, something has been, in a fundamental way, being fixed throughout this whole process of history, starting all the way back with Hayitim Ke'Elohim. Moshe Rabbeinu has reached this level, and yet he's reached this level, of course, in the proper mode. Okay. Now also, Isha, Elohim could be understood as the husband of God. Ish, HaElohim. The husband of God. And that's a very, very heavy idea. Right? The sense of matrimony itself is a heavy idea, and yet Judaism is filled with this concept of being the Jewish people being brides of God, and that there is a kind of marital relation between the human and the divine. But to be referred to as the groom of God, that's a very heavy idea. However, that itself is also suggesting a very high level. Right? A very high level. That God, so to speak, has become a receiver and allows man to be a giver. Right? That is the gift that God has given man. The opportunity to be like God, which is to give of themselves to God. Right? And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu reaching this level of Isha Elohim is also a step forward into the whole process. Now the truth is this quality of matrimony is reflected in three times at the very beginning of this parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, he's blessing the people before he passes, and he says, God misinai ba, God came from Sinai, v'zarach misseir, and he shone from Seir to his people, hofia mehar paran, he revealed himself from the mountain of Paran, v'ata merivvot kodesh, and with him were of his holy, which are the angels, miyamino, in his right hand, eshdat, which is referred to as Torah, for his nation. Now what is Moshe Rabbeinu doing here? Moshe Rabbeinu, before he starts his blessing of the people, he introduces it with praise for God and praise for the people. Okay? And what is the praise for God? The praise for God is that God has approached man. God has come, so to speak. God has made himself available for a human being to encounter while remaining a human being. I mean, how could you encounter the sun without burning up on the spot? And yet the praise of God is God has, so to speak, come towards us from Sinai, which the Midrash says he came towards us like the groom who comes towards his bride. Right? Comes towards his bride. Therefore, we have this association with some kind of marital relationship. And he comes towards us like a groom to a bride, so she doesn't have to walk so far towards him. Right? This is Hashem's praise, so to speak. That because the truth is, you know how far it is to come close to God? It's infinite, right? The only reason anybody could ever feel close to God is because God comes close to man, right? God comes close to man. And therefore, this is the praise of God. This is suggesting the Tzimtzum concept, that God, so to speak, constricts himself to make himself available for man to encounter and yet still remain intact. And God came from Seir. What was God doing at Seir? And what was God doing at Paran? The old tradition fills in over here, and the Gemara brings it down, that Hashem was coming from Seir because he just finished offering the sons of Esav the Torah. Right? And why is God coming from Paran? Because Hashem just offered the sons of Yishmael, right, the Torah. And they did not accept it. Right? When Hashem said to the sons of Esav, would you like the Torah? So the sons of Esav said, well, you know, like, what's in it? Tell me what's in it. And so it says in there, don't murder. And they said, oh, you got the wrong people. How could we accept the Torah when the blessing of our father Esav was, by the sword you shall live? Right? So, can't take it. Sorry. So Hashem approached... The truth is, the Midrash continues on, but it's not hinted here, approaches the Moabites and the Ammonites and say, would you like the Torah? And they say, well, what's in it? It says, don't have incestuous relationships. He says, oh, what are you talking about? That's where we came from. Lot's daughters had a relationship with their father, Lot, and therefore our name is Moab, which means from my father. I mean, how can we accept this Torah when it is, you know, it contradicts? That couldn't accept it. So Hashem went to the Ishmaelites and asked them, would they like to receive the Torah? And they said, well, what's in it? So don't steal. And he said, oh, Ishmael, our father was a thief, right? A kidnapper. I said, how can we take it? We can't accept the Torah. But of course, when God said to the Jewish people, would you like to say to accept the Torah, what did the Jewish people say for 10 points? Right. Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do, and then we will understand, and we will do, and then we will hear. To the deep idea in itself. So what we have here is the praise of God that he's come towards the Jewish people, and a hint to the praise of the Jewish people that they've accepted something that the rest of the nations did not receive. Now the question is, why did those nations not receive in the first place? I mean, if God offers you something, why not take it? What do you got to lose? I mean, what is their problem? Why did they not take the Torah? And really, all the way across this Midrash, they're all saying the same thing. What was the basic point? This does not fit our heritage. Right? Not like we don't like that. No, don't you understand where we're coming from? I mean, Esav, our father Esav was blessed with, by your sword you shall live. How can we accept the Torah? It contradicts where we're coming from, right? And we gave it to Moab and Ammonites, and they said, well, how could we accept the Torah? You know, incestuous relationships? Well, that's where we're coming from. And what about the sons of Ishmael? They said, no, Ishmael, our father was a thief. That's where we're coming from. And so how can we accept the Torah when it contradicts? It does not fit where we're coming from. What is the secret that the Jewish people knew? They were willing to forfeit where they're coming from. They're willing to define themselves not based on where they're coming from, but where they choose to go. That is a completely different kind of human being, right? You transcend nature. If you want to accept Torah, then you must transcend nature. You must transcend destiny. You must go beyond what the past foretells and become the master of the future based on your choices. That's what Torah means. Torah means you enter into a direct relationship with God, the source of all existence. And your future is not a function of your past. Your future is a function of your present relationship with God. And your future is a function of who you choose to become, not who you were born to be. That's what the Jewish people understood. And therefore God said to the Jewish people, who told them the secrets of the angels? Because the angels, their identity is not based on their past. Right? Because angels don't have a past. Angels exist as long as they are doing the will of God. And has nothing to do with some kind of inherent birth or inherent character from birth. Angels are born the moment that they're doing the message and the mission of God. And when they finish the mission of God, they're gone. Right? Their existence is only a function of their relationship with God. That's all. And therefore, that's what the Jewish people knew what to say. And so they could say, we will do, and then we will listen. Without even asking. We don't need to know what's in it. We don't need to figure out, does it fit into my past? You see, that's what some people do when they approach Judaism. They want to see, well, does Judaism fit me? You know, I like it. It fits. Okay, I'll be an Orthodox Jew. Why not? It fits me. Judaism is not a religion based on fitting you, because you are a product of nature. And Torah is a product of revelation and miracle. So if you want Torah to fit you, you've got the wrong Torah. We're talking about a way of life based on miracles, right? Based on transcending principles of that which is and entering into that which can become through my choices. And therefore, when a person is always trying to figure out, well, what does it say? That's because they need to know what it says in order to make this decision, because I have to see, does it fit me? Right? If the Torah has to fit you, then it's not the Torah. Right? It's not the Torah. The question is, do I have the courage to take my future in my hands and make choices which will determine who I am based on my relationship with God? And therefore, this is the praise of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu spent a good number of chapters rebuking the Jewish people, and look how way off you guys are. And yet, of course, he would not leave them without blessing them, without praising them, because his rebuke was only said out of love and care and concern. And if you rebuke a person, it's because you know they have potential. There's no reason rebuking someone if you feel they could never change. There's no reason rebuking someone if you think they couldn't have been anybody else, right? When you rebuke somebody, it's because you know that's not who they are. You know that they have strayed from their inner essence, and you know they can do it better. And therefore, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu ends off his rebuke with his blessings, with his praise, right? And of course, being that he, the man of blessing, he is going to be the conduit for this blessing to come into the people. Right? Otherwise, what's the purpose of a human being blessing anybody? Moshe Rabbeinu praises Hashem, recognizing the greatness of God, recognizing the greatness of the Jewish people. Only then is he able to then become the conduit for this blessing to flow into the people. Okay. And so what did God bring the Jewish people? He approached the Jewish people with his angels, an incredible display. And it says over here, Merivivot Kodesh, from his many angels. And the oral tradition points out, why is it from his many angels rather than with his many angels? From his many angels means that God did not appear with all his angels, right? But just some of them. And of course, what's the point? Right? What's the point of God coming with some angels? You know, when a king reveals himself, he brings, you know, his armies, I mean, everything that he can to demonstrate his majesty and his royalty. But this is all part of the tzimtzum, that God revealed himself in a manner, he diminished his revelation out of humbleness for the purpose of mankind. Right? And what did God bring? In his right hand, which is the hand that gives, which is the hand that nourishes, which is the hand that cultivates, what did God bring? Esh dat. Right? Esh dat. Now what is Esh dat? It's Torah. Why is Torah called fire knowledge? Right? Or fire law. Various ways of trying to understand it. So Rav Shimshon Ferlher says, fire is the driving energy of reality. Right? What is fire dot. It's the consciousness of the fire. He points out, you see, everything's doing the will of God. Everything. Right? Animals, vegetables, everything is completely in sync with Hashem's will. And we once learned the Midrash that says, why did Hashem create man at the end of creation? Why not at the beginning of creation? The Midrash says, because if you fulfill my commandments, then you are the peak. But if you neglect them, then a fly was created before you. And Rav Tzadok HaKohen explains that that means that a fly is more in sync with God than you are when you transgress the mitzvahs. Because that fly does exactly the will of God. But how does a fly do the will of God? From within. It knows the Torah from within. It knows the Torah, but it doesn't know it consciously. It just naturally fulfills the will of God from the fire that pushes nature forward. However, Eshdat, what is Torah? Torah is the knowledge of the fire from without. And why is that so important? Because that means that man now has the freedom of choice to fulfill the will of God and to accord his life to the divine will. And with that choice, become conscious of that relation between himself and the divine. And therefore, Rav Hirsch says, that's what Eshdat is. It's knowledge of the fire. Whereas Eish is driving creation forward, and all of nature is moving in the direction of the Eish without even knowing it, Torah is the articulation of that. And that really jives with what it says in the oral tradition. Why is it called Eishdat? Because before God gave the Torah, it existed prior to creation itself. And the Torah was black fire written on white fire and existed before the world. And the world was created based on Torah. What did God give Moshe? He gave him the Eishdat. The cosmic principles, the fire, so to speak, upon which reality is based, has now been committed to, translated into words on parchment. And now we can read the Torah, and that gives us consciousness of the fire that is prior to creation, which creation is based on. And this is all from Yamino. This is coming from his right hand, which is nourishing man, supporting man. This is the kindness of God, the opportunity for consciousness. Right? That's the opportunity of being a human being. Animals are not aware of themselves. They do not have self-consciousness. And if you don't have self-consciousness, you can't have consciousness of relationship. Right? Can't have consciousness of relationship. But a human being has this unique possibility called self-consciousness. To a certain extent, that is the process of life itself. Because a child, a baby, doesn't have too much self-consciousness. They and the world are one and one and the same. And as a child grows older, they become more aware of themselves and are able to kind of see themselves from outside yet within, which an animal does not apparently have the ability to do, from our position anyways. Okay, so this is the praise of God. God came towards the Jewish people accepted the Torah, and God gave them the Eishdat, which is Torah. Av Chovev Amim. Now this could be read in two ways. Av Chovev Amim means even though he loves the nations, he even loves the nations. Kol Kedoshav Biyadcha. All his holy ones are in your hand. Now, that could read as, according to Rashi, this is referring to every tribe was referred to as a nation. And that God doesn't just love the Jewish people, but he loves every single tribe like a nation. Right? Or, Af Chovev Amim, even when he loves the nations, meaning the whole world, Kol Kedoshav V'yadcha, all his holy ones are in your hands. Referring to that even when the Jewish people are in exile, and it looks like God is beloving the nations, still we know that the holy ones are in his hands. Vehem taku lagrecha, and they, the Jewish people, will stick to your feet, so to speak, yisa midvarecha. They will still continue to learn Torah. Meaning, this is a praise of the Jewish people, that even when it looks like God beloves the nations, and we see the success of the nations, and the Jewish people are in exile, then the Jewish people still devote themselves to Torah, and say, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, this is what these people will say, even when history doesn't seem to completely coordinate with what we would like it to say, they will say, Torah sivalanu Moshe marasha kihilus Yaakov. Torah is inheritance of Moshe. I'm sorry, Moses commands us the Torah. It is the inheritance of Yaakov. What is it that they understand about Torah? What's the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Avram Avinu? Right? Moses, our teacher, Abraham, our father, right? Or Yaakov, our father. Yaakov, the forefathers and the foremothers instilled the Jewish character. Right? The Jewish character. Moshe Rabbeinu was the conduit for a lifestyle which is true to that Jewish character. Right? So therefore, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, what did Moses, the Torah that Moses commanded us, these behavioral laws, what are they really? They are the inheritance of the congregation of Yaakov. Those are of the seed of Yaakov. Those who have inherited the characteristic of Yaakov, they will understand the essence of the Torah. Okay? And that's why we cleave to the Torah even when we're in exile, because we understand that Torah is the only way to be true to ourselves. The oral tradition brings down Morasha. Don't read Morasha, which means inheritance. Read Morasa, which means engagement, betrothal. Another allusion to this concept of betrothal. That what we have here is the Torah is the way, right, to enjoy that sense of being engaged to, betrothed to God. Okay? Be Bishur and Melech, and God will always be a king in Yeshurim, which is the Jewish people. Behit Asef Roshei Am, when the Jews get together, Yachad Shifti Yisrael, when all the tribes will be together. So now what we have here is very interesting allusions to the encounter with God. We have God referred to as a husband, sometimes as a bride, and also there's allusions here of God, not allusions, specifically God as a king. That's the full vision that Judaism has of God, right? That's the way we conceptualize our encounter with God. We have an encounter with God which is king subject orientation, and yet we also have an encounter with God which is husband wife orientation. And the two concepts are crucial for the full understanding of the experience that a Jew has with God. But what you have to appreciate over here is it differs. It's a far cry from the God we met in Bereishit. And the God that people rebelled against in the earliest stories of Bereishit. Because the God we met in Bereishit is a monarch. A monarch that is threatening. A monarch who is attempting to maintain his supremacy by submitting man or subjugating man to his will. And diminishing man's ability to reach that supremacy himself, godliness itself. That's how the Torah starts off with. But the truth is, the process of the evolving relationship between man and God is from king to subject to husband and wife. And yet, without neglecting what was still authentic about the king-subject relationship. And therefore, it's appropriate that all these various allusions to that level of relationship is here at the end, because this is where the Jewish people have reached towards. That they've come all the way down this process of tikkun, whereby man felt this almost incredible dichotomy between himself and God. The king is over there and the subject is over here. And yet the ability to feel that closeness of that inability for dichotomy between the husband and the wife. A husband and wife do not feel a dichotomy. They feel a distinction, but they do not feel a separation. They feel a sense of mutual inclusiveness. Okay. So now Moshe Rabbeinu begins his blessing to the tribes. Okay, after he's praised them, praised Hashem, he now brings his blessings to the tribe. Yechi Ruvein va'al yamot v'hi matav mispar. May Ruvein live and never die, and may those his deceased be of number, meaning hardly anybody. Now what does that mean? What does that mean? So Moses is like taking care of last business over here. Because what Moses is going to do right now is do some future tikkunim before they even happen. What does it mean Reuven will live and not die? Reuven will have Tchiyas HaMeitim, he will enjoy the revival of the dead, and he will not die, meaning he will reach Olam Haba. Now what is this referring to? So the old tradition fills in that Reuven did something which was somewhat sinful. He had exchanged Bilhah's bed, okay? And this was considered a sin, so much so that he lost his portion in Olam Haba. Moshe Rabbeinu right now has restored to Reuven his Olam Haba. Okay, now how do we understand that? But that's the power of Moshe Rabbeinu. The power of the leader who through his Kedusha and through the fact that we are so bound up with him and he with us, right, that he's able to take care of final business over here. May his decease be of number, meaning very small. Because Reuven had sworn to the fact the tribe of Reuven had accepted that they would be on the forefronts of the conquest of Eretz Israel because they wanted to stay on the east side of the Jordan. And therefore, being that they would be on the forefronts, generally their soldiers would be the first to go. Through Moshe's prayer, actually nobody died of Reuven. They all came back safely. Vezot li Yehuda. And this is for Yehuda. Vyomer, and he said, Shema Hashem kol Yehuda, please God, listen to the voice of Yehuda, ve'elamo, and to his nation, tavi'enno, yadav rav lo, ve'ezer mitzarav tihyeh. Bring to his hands plenty and help him from his enemies. Now, what is this referring to? So the oral tradition fills in and says, listen to Yehuda's prayer. Right? Listen to Yehuda's prayer. What prayer? So Rashi brings down the prayers of David and Shlomo and all the various kings that would come out of Yehuda in the future and their needs in the battles that they will encounter. And therefore, according to the old tradition, Moshe's prayer here in Brecha here helped the acceptance of their prayers in the future. Okay? We go on. Ula Levi, and to Levi he said, Amar tu mechavu urecha liish chasidecha. God, your Urim v'tumim, which was, we talked about it, what the Kohanim wore, which was that breastplate which had this, you know, spirit of prophecy that they would ask it and would give answers. This is to the Levites. Of course, out of the Levites come the Kohanim. And they're referred to as the man of kindness. Why? Because you tested them at the waters of Meribah and they succeeded. Right? What happened at the waters of Meribah? So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was being tested by the people. We want water. Hashem said, talk to that rock. And the Jewish people said, we don't want that rock. We want another rock. Right? Why? Because they thought that Moses was this ingenious geologist and would know the right rock somehow, and that they wanted to see a real miracle of water coming out of rock. It was only the Levites who said, we don't care, right? We believe in you. And therefore the Levites were very true. Ha'omer la'aviv limo lo ra'itiv, ve'et achiv lo hikir, ve'et banav lo yadak, yishamrim mertecho britecho yinatsru. They will say to their father and their mother, I didn't see him, and to their brothers, I didn't recognize them, to their sons, I don't know. And this, according to your old tradition, means that the Levites were true in the story of the golden calf. They were the only ones who did not really serve the golden calf. And not only that, they were the ones who brought the retribution on the people with such a love for God that even if those sinners were their mother, father, brother, son, they would not have in any way refrained from bringing the proper justice to bear. Okay? So we go on. So this is a blessing to them. Yoreh mishpatech li Yaakov v'taratech li Yisrael. They will teach Torah to Yaakov and to Israel, and they will place your incense, and they will bring up your offering. May Hashem bless their power in the works of their hands and in their striking the loins of those who come up against them. Okay? Now what is this referring to? The oral tradition says here Moshe Rabbeinu was praying for the Chashmonaim in the story of Hanukkah. Right? And of course, what is the Midrash telling us over here? That Moshe Rabbeinu is beyond just this world and this present moment. But somehow Moshe Rabbeinu, through his bracha, is implying that he and his schut and his direction will be with the people. Right? Not just now, but even later. Okay? LeBinyamin, and to Binyamin he prayed, he blessed them, saying, you are the beloved of God, and God will dwell in security amongst you, hover upon him all the day, between his shoulders he will dwell. This is referring to the fact that Moshe prophetically sees that the Beis HaMikdash will be built in Binyamin's portion. And he hints over here to the three temples. The first temple, God is resting in security. The second temple, the Shekhinah, was not as present as in the first, and it was only hovering, so to speak, and therefore it says, hovers upon him, and yet Ubein Ktafav, but in the between his shoulders will rest, is alluding to the final Beis HaMikdash. And it's based on this pasuk that David HaMelech initially decided that he would build the Beis HaMikdash on the highest mountain in Israel. But when he read this pasuk, he realized that the Beis HaMikdash must be in Binyamin's territory, and being that it says between his shoulders, rather on his head, he put it in a lower mountain. Okay? So here Moshe Rabbeinu is having all these various prophetic visions and blessings. Okay. Then he blesses Yosef, the blessings of delicacies, blessings of the sun, the blessings of the moon, meaning in terms of vegetation. And may God fill him and bring blessing to the head of he who was separated from his sons, from his brothers. And then he alludes to Yeshua by calling him Bechor Shora Hadurlo. Vekarnei Re'em, he's referring to Gideon, who was the son of Menashe, or one of the descendant of Menashe. So again, we have here the Midrash pointing out this ability for Moshe to see and give bracha for the success of his descendants. Okay? Lizvulin, this is verse 18. Zvulin, he said, happy are you, Zvulin, in your going out, and Yisachar in your tents. And it is here that we learn the very famous idea of the relationship between those who are the supporters and those who are the learners of Torah. And that their bracha goes together. Zvulun was a merchant. Zvulun was on the seas. Zvulun was into export and import. That's what Zvulun was all about. And he supported Yisachar. Right? And he supported Yisachar, who learned in the tents. And what will they produce? Amim har yikru sham. Yizbuchu zivchei tzedek. Nations to a mountain will be called, and there they will bring up offerings of righteousness. One approach is, this is referring to the fact that Yisachar will be such experts in Torah, they will know how to establish the new moon, and therefore all the festivals will be based on them, and therefore nations, referring to the tribes, will come to the mountain and bring the offerings. But another approach brought down is, nations will come because of Zvulun, being that merchant, because Zvulun is the international connection. Nations will come to do trade with Israel through Zvulun. When they harbor in the ports of Israel, they will say to each other, hey, we're here anyways, why not hop on the Egged 99 round trip bus and let's see a little bit of, you know, the sightseeing of Israel. They will come to Jerusalem. They will witness the Jewish people serving their God, and they then too will bring righteous offerings. Amim har yikru. Through that international relationships of commerce and business, they will affect the other nations to come visit Israel and be impressed by it. Okay, so this is their bracha. To God, blessed is he who extends your territory. Like a leper, you shall dwell, and you will rip your enemy's arm and head, so to speak. Now, what is that referring to? God is living on the east side of Jordan, and they are constantly threatened by the nations to that side. And therefore, he blessed them with strength and power to defend themselves. V'yar reshit lo, and he wanted the first portion, referring to God wanted the east side of Jordan. Why? Ki sham chelkat mechokek. Because there was the portion of the lawgiver. Why did God really want to stay on the east side of the Jordan? Because he knew that Moses would be buried there. And he couldn't leave the burial area of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why they knew that Moshe wasn't coming into Eretz Israel proper, and therefore they desired to stay there. Okay. Ladan Amar, Gur Aryeh Yizanek Min HaBashan. Dan lived in the north of Israel, and he blessed them to be like a lion. Again, relating to defending himself and defending the Jewish people from enemies coming from the north. Unilaftali amar Naftali svar ratzonim alei birkat Hashem yam v'daram yarsha. Naftali is living in the area of the Kinneret, and there you'll be blessed with the blessings of God, of the blessings of the sea. And this is referring to, according to your old tradition, his fishing abilities and his fish nets. And La'asher, he blessed, that may your sons be blessed. And it says, the old tradition says, that Asher's daughters were so holy that most of them married Kohanim. Okay, married Kohanim. And you will dip your feet in oil, referring to their territory will be so lush with olives, that Asher was known to take baths in oil, right? For skin reasons, I guess. Varzel and nechoshet mina alecha, copper and iron will be of your shoes, so to speak, referring to the fact that they would be involved with mining, and that their area will be full and abundant with copper and iron. Ukiyamecha divanecha, and you, as your early days will be your later days, because the field of mining is of such that it shortens one's life, and therefore he gave him a bracha for long life. And the people of Asher indeed had a bracha of health and long life, even though the kind of work they were involved in was of something that generally shortens people's life. That's the end of all the brachas. Okay, but in general, what do we then see? Right, we see that every tribe gets a bracha. Now the commentaries try to understand what is the order and what are the secrets. And there are various approaches this way and that way, but it remains a big secret. What is really the pshat of all these brachos? Why is Moshe saying these? How do they relate? Most of the commentaries agree that these brachos are related to the inheritance of the land. And for that reason, he did not mention Shimon, because Shimon really inherited his portion amongst Yehuda. Okay? One of the understandings. But Rav Kook points out that every tribe gets its unique bracha, right? And that's what makes the Jewish people special, that they are a one nation that includes many nations. Each tribe is like a nation in and of itself. Each tribe had its own flag, right? Each tribe had its unique color. And the challenge of the Jewish people is to realize that the unity of the people is based on precisely how different we are. And Rav Kook says something that is so appropriate even to our generation. The fact that the difference in the unique quality of every tribe is so critical, it's for that very reason that you will find a manifestation of the uniqueness through hatred. That you will find an incredible amount of struggle, and God forbid, but even hatred amongst the various factions that make up the Jewish people, because it is so crucial to maintain their unique color, it sometimes becomes manifest in a negative way through dispute. Yet we should recognize the power of the dispute. That dispute is coming from actually a holy position, a concern for the maintenance of the uniqueness of every color that makes up the spectrum of the white light of the Jewish people, and that you should appreciate that. And if you can see that kind of tension, so appreciate what will be when we will live in harmony with all the colors included. Okay? So that was the bracha. Every tribe got his unique bracha. Every tribe is unique color. And together, they make up the Jewish people. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu again praises God and praises the Jewish people as a unity, as an encouragement to their future. Ke'en ke'el Yeshurun. There is none like the God of Yeshurun. Rochev Shemayim. He, so to speak, rides the heavens bezrecha in helping you. His majesty is in the heavens, right? Encouraging the Jewish people that even though God is transcendent, from that transcendent position, God is still helping you. Now this can be, again, it's all poetry, so it can be translated in different ways. The Abarbanel says, based on a midrash, Mu'una Elohei Kedem means you, the Jewish people, are the dwelling place of God. Right? You are the sanctuary of God. Umitachat, and below the earth, so to speak. Zroot Olam, you are the arms of the universe. Very heavy pasuk, according to the way the Midrash sees this. That the Jewish people are the habitat of the divine on earth, so to speak. They represent the divine on earth. That's not to mean that they are God, but they are responsible for the presence of God on earth. They are the foundations upon which the world relies. V'yigaresh mipanecha oyev, and therefore God will ultimately cast away your enemies and say, may they be destroyed. And so he blesses Israel. Israel, betach badad, you will dwell individually alone. And the old tradition says this is such an incredible sense of security. Generally, for security's sake, people don't live separate from each other, right? In their own area. But they kind of like group up together. But the Jews will one day enjoy such a sense of security that every Jew will be able to live in his own individual space. They won't have to kind of clump together. Ein Yaakov, like from the vision of Yaakov, you will live in a land which is full of grains and olives, and from heaven will fall the dew of the sky. Ashrecha Yisrael, happy are you Israel, mi kamocha am nosheba Hashem, who is like you, a nation that relies on Hashem. Magen Ezrecha, he who is your protector. Va'asher cherev ga'avatecha, he is the sword of your true ga'ava. What is it that the Jewish people can be proud of? They can be proud of their emuna and their bitachon in Hashem. Okay? And ultimately, this will drive away your enemies, and you will ride on, or you will tread on high places. So this is Moshe Rabbeinu's final blessings to the Jewish people. He envisions for them security. He envisions for them a peaceful, tranquil period where they will once again be able to appreciate their position as being the sanctuary for Hashem, and they will once again understand how they were crucial to the survival of the world.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.